Hello and welcome to the Fit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Jackie Lindahl. I am a mom of two, an avid coffee drinker, and a certified personal trainer. I have been in the fitness industry for nearly 10 years, and I help women get fit, strong, and lose weight without losing their damn minds. If you're looking for help on achieving your health, weight loss, and fitness goals without all the fitness industry confusion and BS, you have come to the right place. Hello and welcome back to the Fit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Jackie. And it's as usual, it's been a minute since I've been on the podcast. Honestly, this summer, I feel like a lot of people say that, but this summer has gone by so fast and there's been a lot going on this summer that I unintentionally didn't get in as many podcasts as usual, or as I wanted to, I should say. And not only that, I have been having trouble with the platform that I use to record my podcasts on. This is honestly my third attempt in recording a podcast, and I'm really hoping that this one goes through. So if you actually hear it, just so you know, this is my third attempt at this one because I don't know what's been going on with the platform, but it hasn't been like saving my videos and it's been losing them and everything. And it's been annoying to say the least bit. But anyways, it's been a hectic summer, as I feel like a lot of people would empathize with, you know, just with family stuff and then trying to get like work done here. We have a bunch of projects on our property and then some of them unexpectedly popped up. And then I was having, you know, both of my horses kind of went through some vet things that I won't really bore you with the details, but anyways, that was pretty stressful. And then obviously trying to have fun in the summertime, because summer is very, very short here, and trying to have fun with my girls and go and do things. Anyways, it's just been a lot. So here we are, middle of August, finally putting out a podcast, hopefully end of August. So in today's podcast, I wanted to discuss some fitness truths that the internet loves to get mad about. There's certain things that even though they're facts and it's the truth, people love to get upset about on the internet. So I'm calling this one fitness facts that people get mad about, but facts don't care about your feelings. Because there are, like I said, there's a bunch of things out there on the internet that unfortunately they are the truth, and there's data and reasoning behind these things. And people love to just get mad about them, or they love to argue about them on the internet. But unfortunately, these are some things that they just are the way that they are. So I have a little list here that I wanted to get into, fitness facts that don't care about your feelings, we'll call it. So starting with number one, you are not addicted to sugar. Now, I love how people love to argue about this one and say like, I cannot tell you how many times I've had a client come to me and tell me that they have a sugar addiction. And then when I dig further into this sugar addiction that they're speaking of, what they're talking about are foods such as cakes, cookies, donuts, those types of higher carbohydrate foods. Now, the one thing that people don't really remember when it comes to these higher carbohydrate foods is it's not just the sugar. It is a delicate balance of sugar and fat. Think about how you make cookies. Think about how you make a cake. Think about how donuts are made, how pizza is made. It is a delicate balance of some form of sugar or carbohydrate with fat. What are the first two ingredients in chocolate chip cookies? Butter and sugar. And you mix them together and it tastes unbelievable. So these higher carbohydrate foods such as donuts, cakes, chocolates, etc., are a balance of sugar and fat. And it makes them very, very, very fucking tasty and hard to say no to. Oftentimes, people will say, well, I crave sugar. Okay, well, what are you craving? You're craving donuts, chocolate chip, you know, chocolate cookies, those kinds of higher sugar foods. Yes, but they're also higher fat. They are very tasty and they're hard to say no to. Welcome to the fucking club. I also crave donuts and chocolate chip cookies and cakes and those kinds of things because those foods are really tasty. Now, what grinds my gears about this is people literally saying things like sugar is just as addicting as cocaine. What annoys me about this is it diminishes real drug addiction, real life destroying, relationship destroying, health destroying addiction with drugs or alcohol or other substances. And it diminishes that. And it makes it, you know, like people are trying to say like their love for chocolate chip cookies is the same as somebody's addiction to a harmful substance such as cocaine. And to me, that is so insulting to addicts and recovering addicts, because clearly you just don't understand then what that type of addiction actually is. So it's oftentimes it's people getting this idea in their head that if they crave a fucking chocolate chip cookie, they're addicted to it. It's like, well, no, you just crave it. It's good. It's oftentimes those foods are seen as a comfort food. You associate, I'm emotional to having those types of foods because those are the types of foods that make us feel good inside, that kind of connection. Not only that, the other connection that I don't really feel like a lot of people think about is when you are making changes to your nutrition, you want to start eating healthier. What is often the first thing that a lot of people do? They start to cut out those foods. They cut out the higher sugar foods, pop, chocolate, cookies, cakes, donuts, etc., because they're quote unquote unhealthy and high sugar. So they'll often cut out those types of foods, which often inevitably, because they're restricting those foods so much, it makes them crave it more. And then they think that something's wrong because they're craving those types of foods. So yes, you can have, I would say, like a crutch when it comes to those types of foods. Oftentimes people will, like I said before, use them for if they're feeling upset, if they're emotional, they'll use those types of foods as a comfort. You can have a hard time saying no to those foods. Those foods can, you know, be sometimes a trigger for people, but you're not addicted to sugar. It's not an addiction. And please stop saying that, because the other thing that you need to think about here is your words matter. If you're saying I'm addicted to something or I'm addicted to sugar, you're making it seem as though you're powerless against it, which isn't true, because it's not on the same level as an actual addictive substance such as cocaine. So when you're saying things like, I'm addicted to sugar, it's just as addicting as cocaine, etc., you're literally speaking that to yourself, and you're going to start to believe it, essentially, when it's not true. Number two, cortisol is not the reason that you've gained weight. Now, I know all of the Betty Booty Bands on Instagram are telling you that their hormone balancing program is going to help balance your hormones, lower your cortisol, and make you lose belly fat. I know they are. I know. But here is the thing. They're full of shit. They're completely full of shit, and they don't know what they're talking about. So let's talk about cortisol in and of itself. I did do a podcast not that long ago with Dr. Carl Nadolsky, who is an endocrinologist. So literally studies hormones. And we talked quite a bit about cortisol. So I may link that one in the show notes, because he really talked about a lot of really valuable insights when it comes to cortisol and the actual, what cortisol actually does in the body and the issues that can come up with that. But the kind of Coles Notes version, cortisol is a hormone in your body. It's often attributed as the stress hormone. And people who have higher stress levels, generally their cortisol levels are more elevated than other people who maybe don't have as high of stress levels. So yes, cortisol is attributed to stress, but it also has a bunch of other functions in the body other than just being related to stress. Cortisol is also a hormone that helps control water weight in the body. What can happen for somebody who has higher cortisol levels is it can artificially inflate the scale or make you feel like you've gained weight, because it can make you retain more water and make you feel bloated, make your pants fit tight, make the scale go up, those kinds of things, which is how you feel like maybe you have gained weight because you're stressed. The other thing that we really need to think about is higher stress also does a lot of things psychologically on the body, which can affect our weight loss goals. So if you are somebody with higher cortisol levels because you're really stressed, you might not be sleeping well. You might not have energy or the time or the capacity to want to exercise. You may not have the energy or the time or the capacity to want to eat well. Some people, when they are stressed, as I mentioned before, they emotionally eat. Some people, when they're stressed, they don't eat. And those, all of those things can affect your behaviors, what you want to eat, your activity levels, and all of those things combined together can affect whether or not you gain and or lose weight. So this is how people who maybe go through a really stressful period of time in their lives, they may gain weight because of they don't have, they're not sleeping well, they don't have the capacity to be able to exercise or to want to eat well. And because they're emotional, because they're upset, they're sleep deprived, they're stressed, they want to eat more. And that's how they may gain weight. Now, it's not that it makes you a bad person or anything like that. Just different people react to stress differently. There's other people where their reaction to stress is they want to go work out to distract themselves, or they don't eat because they're stressed. I'm one of those people that when I am very stressed, my appetite, gone. My appetite is gone. And other people are the exact opposite. So cortisol and stress can affect certain things in your life, which can make you gain weight. But a high cortisol level in and of itself does not equate to gaining weight. It can affect a bunch of different things, and it is definitely a factor. It's not that it's not important, because number one, you need cortisol. Cortisol is an important hormone in your body. If you don't have cortisol, you'll die. You need cortisol in your body, but some people, just like other hormones, they have too much or they have too little. And you want to have Goldilocks just right. So it's not the reason in and of itself that you've gained weight, but it can affect a lot of lifestyle factors if you are chronically stressed. And it also can artificially inflate the scale, make you feel more bloated and things like that, because it also plays a role in water retention in your body. Number three. You need to be more consistent than you think when it comes to your weight loss goals. So you'll hear me talk about the 80-20 rule, and you'll hear me talk about my consistency calendar a lot if you have followed me for more than 5 minutes. I talk about those things a lot. And the reason why I talk about those things is because oftentimes we don't necessarily lie to ourselves on purpose, but we do kind of lie to ourselves about how consistent we are actually being. And we get caught up in this weight loss mindset. And it doesn't necessarily mean, just because we're in a weight loss mindset, it doesn't necessarily mean that we are actually doing the things that we need to do to lose weight. And I am just as guilty of this as anybody else. And I've learned over the years that if I'm not seeing the results that I want, or I'm seeing the scale kind of uptick more than I thought it should be, then my first steps are I print off my consistency calendar and I start tracking my consistency. And then usually after about 2 or 3 weeks of tracking, I realize, oh, I actually haven't been as consistent as I thought I was. And I do this all the time with clients. If I have somebody who is swearing up and down, they're doing everything right, they're staying, and they're like, I'm 80% consistent. And then I ask them, have you been tracking your consistency? And they say no. First thing I say is, Kate, you're going to print off the consistency calendar and you're going to track. And track your consistency and be honest with yourself. And usually after about a week or two, they'll message me and say, oh, I guess I haven't been as consistent as I thought I was. And so hitting that true 80% consistency requires more rigidity than you think. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. Of course, we're aiming for 80% here. We're not aiming for perfect, but it is more than you think. A lot of people, when they think they're being 80% consistent, maybe they're 60 to 70% consistent. So that's just something to keep in mind, that especially when it comes to a weight loss goal, generally speaking, you have to be more on track than you think you do. And yes, there is still room for flexibility. Yes, the 80-20 rule still works, but 80% is still very, very high consistency. So out of 30 days, to hit 80%, you have to be about hitting your goals about 25 out of those 30 days, which is a lot. It's not 100% perfection, because we don't want that, but it is a lot of days. So if you are finding that you are in that mindset where you are you're like, I'm being so consistent, and my goals aren't happening the way they thought, just check your consistency for a few weeks and just see where you're at. And the data doesn't lie. Number four, calorie tracking is not inherently bad. So calorie tracking, or macro tracking, calorie counting, all the above, has been really demonized over the past few years as it's obsessive. It means that you have an eating disorder, and it's not necessarily true. There are nuances to this, just like many other things. So calorie tracking in and of itself is not a bad thing. I think of calorie tracking or macro tracking or calorie counting as similar to tracking my finances. If I'm a person, and I'm a person who does track her finances. Like, I track everything that we spend because I'm that kind of person. But if I find that I am having not enough money at the end of my month, or, you know, like, oh my gosh, where are we spending all of our money? What's going on? Why aren't we sticking to our budget that I want? Then you go and you track your finances. And you just see, what have you been spending your money on? Where is it going? Are you ordering Skip the Dishes four nights a week and not really paying attention to it? Are you buying things off of Amazon that you don't really need, and that's why your credit card bill is racked up? These kinds of things can give you an insight as to what's going on with your finances. I attribute calorie tracking, macro tracking, or calorie counting as the exact same thing, just like checking a budget. If you are trying to work on a weight loss goal and you are not seeing the results that you want, but you haven't been tracking or monitoring your calorie intake, that's a great place to start. Now, the other thing that people will talk about on the internet is calorie tracking isn't supposed to be forever. And that I agree with. It's not supposed to be forever. It's a tool that can be used to help you learn what calories are in what foods, portion sizes, and things like that. So no, you don't have to track for forever. I tracked for a number of years on and off to the point where I have a pretty good ability to guesstimate foods. But even now and then, when I find myself not really seeing the results that I want, I'll start tracking my consistency, and then I start tracking my calories just for a couple weeks, and it gets me right back on track. That's it. Now, on the other hand, calorie tracking isn't for everybody. There are people out there that they should not calorie track or calorie count. People who struggle with their relationship with food, people who have struggled with eating disorders, those kinds of things, people who have maybe tracked in the past and it led down a very obsessive slippery slope. There are people that should not calorie track. And I take that approach very seriously with my clients, where I have some clients who track their calories, track their macros, and it really helps keep them in check, keeps them in track for their goals. And there's other clients that that's just not the good approach for them. And instead, we focus more so on habits, things that we need to add in and stuff like that. And they don't have to calorie track or count. So it's not that it's inherently bad, but at the same time, it's not for everybody. Both things can be true at the same time. It just matters to the individual what their goals are and what's an appropriate approach for them. And just because it's not something that works for you doesn't mean that it can't be a helpful tool to help somebody else. Similar to intermittent fasting, it can be a helpful tool for some people and not a helpful tool for other people. Both things can be true at the same time. Number five, intuitive eating is a learned behavior. So this has come up a lot, where people will talk about you shouldn't calorie track or macro track. You should just learn to eat intuitively. And I agree, but the key here is learn. A lot of people who will talk about, I eat intuitively, I'm an intuitive eater, they have gone through a learning process on how to do that for themselves. Some form of a learning process. Most people don't come out of the womb and grow up and know how to eat intuitively. Unfortunately, especially in North America, it's just, think about it, diet culture, what we were told growing up, all of these diets that have been thrown at us all our entire lives, we don't really know how to follow our intuition. How many women do you know have tried a dozen or more diets in their lifetime? And all of these kinds of things have skewed our idea of what eating intuitively is. And a lot of people will think that eating intuitively is just you eat whatever the fuck you want. And unfortunately, no, that's not really what intuitive eating is. Because I know for me, if I didn't go through a learning process of learning what healthy eating is, learning how to hit protein goals, find out what calorie goals work for me, tracking and those kinds of things, my intuition is that I can eat an extra large pizza to myself. Now, just because I can fit an extra large pizza in my body doesn't mean I should. And I know that now, but I can tell you how many extra large pizzas I have eaten in my lifetime before I actually learned that. So intuitive eating, I would consider an ultimate goal to reach to, but a lot of people need to learn how to get there, because otherwise their intuition kind of leads them astray sometimes. So it's not that it's unattainable. There are people who are very good at regulating their portions and what they eat and don't really have that issue at all. And there are other people like me who need to go through a learning phase in learning how to eat intuitively. Now I would say I'm pretty good at knowing how to eat intuitively. I know that when I start to feel like crap, it's usually because I've been eating like crap and I need to change that. I know that when I don't hit my protein goals, I don't feel as full. I know that when I don't hit my fiber goals, my stomach and my digestion is kind of off. And I know these things because I went through a learning period of measuring and hitting protein goals, of hitting fiber goals, of tracking calories and stuff, that I'm pretty good at regulating these things now. So it is a learned behavior for a lot of people. Yes, there are some people who can just naturally know how to eat intuitively for themselves, but it's not everybody. Again, two things can be true at the same time. There's nuances to these things. Number six, and this one might be controversial. Calling yourself an all or nothing person doesn't mean shit. I did a post on Instagram recently about this, and it's based off of every single client. And I have worked with like hundreds of people at this point over the past 8 years as a trainer. Every single person that I have come across has told me they are an all or nothing person. Every single one. Now, what's interesting about that is everybody believes that they're an all or nothing person and that makes them different. But everybody is an all or nothing person in their mind when it comes to health and nutrition. The reason why I say this is because a lot of people use this all or nothing mentality as an excuse to not try. That's really what it means when they call themselves an all or nothing person, is that they're using it as their crutch and their excuse that when things get hard or if they slip off track a little bit, they'll say, I'm all or nothing, I'm on or off, or I'm no in between, and then they stop trying. Here's what I've learned over the years. All of these people who say that they're all or nothing when it comes to their health and fitness goals, they are not all or nothing when it comes to their job. If they get sick, they don't quit their job. The brutal and honest truth when it comes to it is that when you tell yourself you're an all or nothing person, you're giving yourself an out to be able to quit. And because you're telling yourself that over and over and over again, you believe it. You believe I'm all or nothing. I'm no in between. What's the point in even trying? And you give yourself that out. How do you get over this? It's hard because it takes a lot of behavior change and a lot of mindset changes. But the first step in quitting the all or nothing mentality is literally stop fucking calling yourself all or nothing. Quit calling yourself that, because the more you call yourself that, the more you're going to keep believing it. The next thing is learning how to be consistent. Start tracking your consistency. Set yourself realistic fucking expectations. And also stop letting yourself quit. If you stop letting yourself quit every single time it gets hard, it literally takes away that all or nothing mindset, because you're not going to let yourself quit this time. Now, all of these things easier said than done. Yes, ma'am. However, though, it's the God honest truth. Like I said, I've worked with, hundreds of people at this point, and every single person has told me that they are an all or nothing person, which means that it's not the special unicorn that everybody feels like it is. There you go. Tough love over. You can leave a mean comment in the view section if you'd like, or message me on Instagram with your thoughts. Number seven, to make long-term permanent change, you need to make changes around your behaviors and mindset around food and exercise. So what I mean by this, and I had a discussion with a client about this not that long ago, is if you legitimately want to see real permanent change, like you want to lose 20 pounds and you never want to gain it back and you never ever want to have to, you know, go through the process of losing 20 pounds again, it might not be the most realistic goal ever. But what I'm trying to say is, if you want to change your lifestyle, you need to focus on making permanent changes to your life. Now, I'm not saying that you need to become a completely different person and, you know, you need to become this fitness obsessed person that maybe you're not right now. But what I mean is that there are permanent changes that need to happen in your life to make that lifestyle change permanent. So things like changing your mindset around exercise. So many people go into a weight loss phase with the mindset of, I'm just going to exercise as much as I can so I can lose weight. And that's it. That's their only fucking focus around exercise. So changing your mindset around exercise to from being completely just focused on weight loss to focused on health, to focus on longevity, to focus on strength, to focus on taking care of your body, being injury free, being more resilient as a person, less prone to injury, those kinds of things. Those types of behavior changes and mindsets around exercise need to change. Same thing with food. Oftentimes people will just want to go to, I'm just going to eat really, really strict until I lose weight, and then I'll go back to doing what I was doing before. But we all know that doesn't fucking work. Because when you go back to doing what you were doing before, the weight inevitably comes back on. Now, do you need to be eating in a calorie deficit for forever? No, absolutely not. But there are behavior changes around food that you need to implement permanently. You need to learn how to implement portion control, eating sufficient protein, eating sufficient fiber, getting in good quality nutrients, and then also learning how to moderate better, because moderation is often the hardest thing to learn for people. So all of these things don't need to change today or tomorrow, but these are slow changes that need to happen over time and be permanent. And this is why I'm such a big advocate of, if you cannot follow a diet for forever, do not do that diet. If you cannot go on keto and see yourself on it for the rest of your fucking life, don't go on it. This is the biggest issue that I also have with restrictive diets, because people can't stay on them for forever. So if you want to see permanent change for the rest of your life, you do need to make some permanent changes, which is why your expectations and your methods need to be sustainable and realistic. You don't need to change every single thing about your personality and about your life, but there are things that do need to change, and change permanently, for you to achieve your goals and maintain them for the rest of your life. And these are things that I had to implement too. So things like calling yourself an all or nothing person for the rest of your life. You can't do that and try to maintain and sustain your results. For me, it was, I needed to change my mindset around exercise, as it's not a temporary thing. It is a for life thing. When I started exercising and I finally decided that I was going to take my shit seriously, it was literally, I'm going to do this now for the rest of my life. In some way, shape, or form, I'm going to exercise no matter what for the rest of my life. Same thing with nutrition. It was, there are old habits that I had to leave behind and I had to change about my nutrition. So things like, I don't need to eat an extra large pizza and feel like a piece of shit or feel shitty afterwards anymore. Because A, it's not good for me. B, it makes me feel like shit. And C, it's not going to help me with my goals long term. Doesn't mean that I can't have pizza anymore. It just means that I don't need to eat an entire one all to myself anymore. Those kinds of things for me needed to change permanently for me to get the results I wanted and to be able to sustain them. So some things that you need to consider when it comes to looking at the methods and the expectations that you have for your goals. Last one, number 8, is, this is more of an industry secret that a lot of people don't talk about. More people in the fitness industry, influencers, trainers online, are on gear, and you need to be cautious with your body goals and unrealistic expectations. So what is gear? Gears meaning like anabolic steroids. A lot of people in the fitness industry, especially influencers, ones who stay super lean 24/7, always have visible abs, all those kinds of things, a lot of them are on steroids to help them stay that way. There are some people who are just genetically fucking blessed, and I'm super jealous of those people. But there are a lot more people who are on drugs and don't own up to it, and then they will try to sell you their fucking supplements, programs, diet, Liver King, all of those kinds of things, because that's what sells. And they will say, look it, I got this amazing body by doing this diet, blah, blah, blah. When they didn't, it doesn't mean that they didn't work hard. Don't get me wrong. Just because you're doing steroids, it doesn't mean that you're not putting in the work to get big and to get strong. But by saying that it's only your diet or only your exercise program or only your supplements that got you there is a lie, because it's not. You had extra help, and it's okay. Like, I don't have a problem with people using steroids. A lot of people use them, and it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that they don't have to be on top of their diet. It doesn't mean that they don't have to be in the gym working their ass off, but it gives them an edge. It gives them a leg up in comparison to people who aren't. So then people will see these super lean, super cut, super jacked physiques promoting their supplements, their diet, or their workout program and be like, oh, I can do that and look like that. When the truth is no, because if that person didn't have steroids, they wouldn't look like that, even with the diet, the supplements, and the workout program. So just keeping those things in mind that when you're scrolling through Instagram and you see Betty Booty Bands and, you know, she's jacked to the nines or looking amazing or whatever, just because you follow her program, her diet, and all those kinds of things doesn't mean that you're going to look like her. Okay. And this goes for people who are on steroids or not on steroids, because we are all built differently. We all look different. And I catch myself in the comparison game just as much as anybody else. Let's not, you know, I'm not going to be dishonest about that. I compare myself to people online as well, especially as somebody who's in the industry. There's a lot of pressure to look a certain way in the fitness industry. But then I have to remind myself of these things that I know that are kind of behind the scenes that a lot of people don't talk about in the industry. So there you have it. The fitness facts that do not care about your feelings. I hope that you found this episode helpful, and I want it to be more of an educational podcast and not shitting on you podcast, except for the whole all or nothing one. People don't like hearing that, but that's okay. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please, I would love and appreciate a 5-star written review. It just helps increase visibility of the podcast so that I can help more people just like you. If you haven't already, also feel free to head over to Instagram and you can follow me on Instagram. I will leave the link in the show notes. If you have questions about my personal training programs or options, feel free to head to my website, www.fitlikeagirl.ca. I will also leave that in the show notes. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening, and I'm hoping to actually get this podcast here out in the world. Third time's a charm, right? Talk to you soon.